23 past the hour as we continue here on Sports Talk. This came in from Robert about 15 minutes ago. Hey, guys. I really like Coach Golding as coach, but why do they keep losing out on recruits? I don't want another season like last year. It's from Robert. And it's a fair question. It's an absolutely fair question. Because, you know, they did get two. Now let's preface this. They have Baylor Hebb, who they haven't officially introduced yet. They'll probably do that next week. He's the former Colorado State and Loyola Chicago guard that Joe Golding's been after since his days at ACU. But Baylor Hebb has never put up any numbers in Division I college sports. Never. None. Yet he was so good after his junior year in high school, he had 19 offers. 19. And Loyola Chicago went to the Sweet 16 his freshman year with him on that roster. Porter Moser's a really good coach. So you think about it, and you understand that, you know, either one of two things is the case. Either nobody's been able to really get Baylor Hebb to develop at the Division I level, and Joe Golding will do his best to do that. Or the other option is, well, maybe Baylor Hebb is just an example of one of these players that never could make the jump from high school to Division I. And if that's the case, then that's a big problem for UTEP. But Joe Golding's happy. He's always wanted him. He gets him. And now he has an opportunity to develop him. And then we also have the other guard, Camper, the JUCO player, who was averaging 19 a game last year at Tyler Junior College. And, you know, that's somebody that will definitely see playing time and can help. So you add those two to the mix. You still need players. Players that can, you know, create off the dribble, make their own shot. You need another wing. You lost Sibley. You need another wing. You know, some will say, well, they need a low post player because they lost Onyema. Well, you still have right now Kalu and Hamilton. Is that enough? Only time will tell. And you could even say Dos Anjos could play down low, even though he shoots threes and he profiles more to me as like almost like a three than he does a four or a five. So I'm interested to see what UTEP does with these two remaining scholarships, where they go. So, you know, part of the UTEP fan right now will say, hey, there's still tons of guys in the portal. There's a lot of teams that are spending their money and using up their spots right now. So it pays to be patient because you could have somebody fall into your lap that if you sign one of these other players earlier, you wouldn't have a chance to get. Maybe you're better for it. The other thing is that if you keep losing out on players and you have NIL money to spend and you have opportunities, now you start to say, how is this group not closing more players that they're focusing in on? How are they not able to seal the deal? I don't know. I mean, I'm not around campus. All I know is this. I mean, Joe Golding seems like the kind of coach that everybody would want to play for. He's super excited. He is a player's coach. And if you've ever been to one of his practices, you see how these guys give everything they have for him. You would think that if Joe Golding went to visit family and talk to a parent and talk to the kids themselves, they'd be on board. But if that's the case, Adrian, how is it that, you know, three players that they had been zeroing in on the last few weeks all made up their mind and UTEP was not the destination for any of them?
Yeah, it's the harsh reality that UTEP has to realize right now that they are just not landing these guys and not winning the recruiting battles like they were in years past. I don't know what it is right now. Maybe you could think of things like geography, where El Paso is located. You could think of things like NIL dollars and resources. But I throw all those things out the window when you look at the caliber of player that was here prior to this coaching staff. I mean, you look at the Bryson Williams, the Sule Oleh Booms of the world. And yeah, those guys are really hard to get. It's I understand how difficult it is to try to land somebody like that. And I to those optimistic and patient fans, I would say, hey, you might be right on the long game. Daryl Edwards was a late arrival, and he made an immediate impact when he was here for the minors as a graduate transfer. Maybe UTEP's waiting for somebody like that to be available to who they, you know, a guy that they can approach like that. So I kind of look at it both ways. There are some times where I could feel very negative toward the recruiting class, and then there's times where I look at this and say, hey, there's still light at the end of the tunnel. I would doubt that this is how UTEP is going to go into the fall the way that they're built right now. They've got to improve at some key positions, and shooting is one of the biggest spots right now. They've got to get better shooting.
Now think about this too. It's very important. Despite the fact that Joe Golding won 20 games his first year, and we all know how that worked, you know how that went with his team, the Miners haven't really had back-to-back solid or great seasons. Let's just put it this way. Since 2013-14 and 14-15 with Tim Floyd, all right? He had two great years. He went 23-11 in 2013-2014, 12-4 in the league, and he went 22-11 the following season, 13-5 in the league. And you want to know something? That's the last two seasons the Miners have had that were really of note in basketball. So when you think about that and you realize that it's been almost 8 years, 8 years since the Miners have been, you know, stringing together a couple of 20-plus seasons that were relevant in basketball, that's part of the problem too, I think, is, you know, we say it before, we'll say it again, okay? I'm old enough to remember the 80s. I grew up in that time period. That was my era, okay? Those were my teenage years, and, you know, I have incredible memories of this program in the 80s. Guess what? That's 35 years ago, all right? 35 years ago. I'm almost 50. I'll be 50 next month. So, yeah, I grew up in the 80s. I'm 50. So, Adrian's 26. Guess what he's grown up to watch? A lot of disappointment. That's what he's seen. I mean, the last time the Miners went to an NCAA tournament, Adrian was 13 years old. All right? Alicia's probably never seen anything exciting in her life as far as UTEP goes. So, and that's the tough, and if she did, it was a one-off. And that's the hardest part, too. So, as tough as it is, we're living in the past, Miner fans. We're all living in the past. It's just the way it is. And it's so difficult because every single fan wants to see this program turn the corner. Every single fan wants that to happen. But you know what? It's not easy. Tim Floyd couldn't do it. Rodney Terry couldn't do it. Only time will see if Joe Golding can do it. It's a tough, tough situation here right now. And the fact is, we all know the history that UTEP Minor men's basketball has, but guess what? It's ancient history when you look at the last 20-plus years and we see what this program has not done versus what it has done.
Yeah, just real quick, also with football, I mean, you talk about year after year, they won 7 games and then back to 5. You know, they go back, you look back to the 2014 bowl game, they won 7 games and then the next year all the way back to 5. So it's like year over year continuity, year over year consistency when it comes to winning is almost impossible to find when it comes to UTEP athletics.
It's true. But we thought, Adrian, we thought that the Miner collective and making them a legitimate player in the NIL game. Because let's just say, for a mid-major like UTEP, if it's true and they have $300,000 or $400,000 in their collective right now for NIL for men's basketball only, hey, that's money. That's you know what? You can at least be in the game with that, with
There's
those
no
dollars.
Excuses.
No, there is no excuses. Look, last year they had $0. The collective hadn't been established yet. So they brought in their entire team with no money. So the excuse was, hey, we didn't pay anybody anything. We did the best we could with what we had to work with. Okay, totally understand. You get a mulligan, right? You get a mulligan. This offseason, completely different story. You have money to spend. Money to use for bringing in players like everybody else does in the game. You're in the game now. You are in the game. So you know what? You got to do it. You got to produce. You got to deliver. And, you know, that means, and that's another thing, by the way. Let's bring this up. These kids that UTEP was after, that they didn't get, there were no 20-point-per-game guys at Division I. They were all 10, 11, 12. We're not talking about, you know, guys that are leading their team in scoring or ripping it up. We're talking about, you know, guys that are, they're role players is what they are. So, and they didn't get them. So now you say to yourself, what will they get? What will they get? We do not know. Joe Golding and his staff, they don't know because the portal is full. They're making calls. They're trying to get visits. They're busy right now. They are busy. And they only have two spots to fill. So you know what? You want to make the most. You don't want to blow it. You don't want to take a project and hope they pan out. You got to hit it out of the park. And you know what? Hopefully they'll be able to do just that. We'll have to wait and see. Two calls to get to. First, SportsCenter. Here's Adrian with the latest. One line available, 505-6009 here on Sports Talk. Let's go to the phones first. It's Brian from downtown. Brian, thanks for the call. How are you?
I'm as frustrated as you sound.
I believe it. Except the difference between the two of us is this. You're old enough to remember the 60s and the 80s, yes. Okay? You're one up on me for that, Brian.
Well, I'm 24 years up on you, but
that's true.
I remember Big Jim Bad News Barnes being the force inside in the 63-64 team. I'm sorry. You know, but that's not why I called. You know, I'm frustrated because I saw last year and the year before a lot of talent on the floor, okay? I just don't see the coaching. I'm sorry. I couldn't name you three or four assistant coaches, but I tell you what, when you're creating turnover after turnover by throwing a bounce pass inside the 3-point lane, I'm sorry. You're not being coached properly. I'm sorry, but you're not. And if you're only hitting 50% of your free throws, you're not being coached properly. So I don't care who you get. If you're not going to coach these kids, they're not going to win.
You know what? Hey, that's a point that you're not the first and you won't be the last to bring that up. You absolutely won't be.
What assistant coaches are in the portal? What assistant coaches are out there that have proven their worth? I don't want just a guy that used to be a this or used to be a that. I want a proven assistant coach.
So,
I want a guy that's been trying to be a head coach for 4 or 5 years and hasn't made it yet, and maybe this is a stepping stone for him.
That brings me to another point, okay? Another point. And that's a great point you brought up, okay? Because this goes back to the assistant staff for Rodney Terry and now the assistant staff for Joe Golding. And that is, they need more money in their coaching pool than what they have right now. They need more to work with. Because to bring in the kind of coaches that you want, you need more money that they don't have right now. They need more. I'm telling you right now, Brian, they need more. Because,
you know, here we're worried about a really good player being you know, wooed away and going into the portal. I want an assistant coach that you're worried about every year about somebody stealing him away and making him a head coach. I never hear that.
Fair enough. I agree with you. I agree. Good point. Well said. Well put. Appreciate the call. Brian from downtown getting in. Let's keep moving. 39 past. Here is, been waiting for this one. It's none other than Gator Richard who joins us on the show. What's up, Richard? Go Gators!
Hey, go Gators. Hey, the other day you're talking wrestling.
Oh, yeah, and, talking wrestling. I was at the matches on Sunday.
As a kid, and I went completely bonkers, man, when I heard superstar Billy Graham is coming to the Jacksonville Veterans Memorial, I had to go. My dad already anticipated it. Had like four ringside tickets for me and my buddies. We were there.
Oh my God, that's fantastic! Was that back when? Was that when Superstar was still the champion?
Yeah, he was there. He was wrestling Dusty Rhodes.
Oh, nice.
And Dusty was my favorite, and then of course Superstar Billy Graham. I mean, the guy was huge. He was like back in the day, like a bodybuilder, like Arnold Schwarzenegger,
He was Hulk Hogan giant. Before Hulk Hogan.
Before Hulk Hogan, before Steve Austin.
Yep,
and,
yep. No, I know.
Before the Road Warriors, all
That's
those
right.
guys.
That's right.
So I wanted to put that in there. That,
Thank you.
Those guys were classic, man. I met the Road Warriors, Barry Windham, one night. That's another story, man. Me and my buddy Tim almost got in a scrap with him because
oh my God,
my friend Tim, he wouldn't shut his mouth, man. Like poking Barry Windham. Barry Windham's like big, like 6'6", 6'4".
Barry Windham was enormous, and the Road Warriors were huge. That was the team. I get it. Good thing you guys didn't fight them. That would not have ended well. That would not have ended.
They would have been telling their grandkids that they ran into two old boys from Jacksonville that gave them a run for their money. But anyhow, watch this. Shohei Ohtani, he needs some team to show him the money, and
yes,
I'm thinking
he does.
Boston.
Well, guess what? It's going to happen. He's either going to get
wants to play for a contender, which is not going to be the current team he's on.
No, he's either going to go to the Dodgers, or he's going to go to the Mets, or he's going to go to the Yankees. That's what he's going to end up getting when it's all said and done. He's going to go to one of those teams.
Here's the thing, though. The Yankees don't deserve a player like Shohei. They broke up Ichiro's Iron Man run that he had, like consecutive games. And I hate the Yankees. They can go straight to hell, okay, for doing that to the man.
It's personal. It's personal. I like that.
Yeah, you don't just some guy that's going to break like the consecutive, Lou Gehrig Iron Man and then like sit him out, just arbitrarily sit him out.
Well, what if they go ahead and they bring in, what if the Dodgers get him? He'll be like, they had Hideo Nomo years ago, and now they could have Shohei Ohtani. That'd be a big deal.
Well, Shohei needs to be shown some money. We're talking like, what's the highest paid guy right now, like 280?
No, no, no. They're like close to 400, actually.
Okay, well, he needs to be upwards of 600.
Okay.
Because he's hitting home runs like nobody's business, and he's a pitcher. He's like that.
He throws 100 miles an hour. Not just a pitcher. He throws 100 miles an hour.
103 is against his teammate during the World Baseball Classic,
yep,
which he won the MVP.
Deserving.
Of the whole thing.
And deserving for that, too. He did. So you're right.
I mean, you need to pay him as if he's two players. So if the highest paid baseball player is $400 million, you need to pay him $800.
I like that.
And he's going to be the face of the franchise that won't get in trouble like some of these clowns that, take a gun to a nightclub or something weird.
I got you. All right, Richard, thanks for your soapbox on Shohei. Listen, I'm all about Ohtani. I love him. I love him too. He's terrific.
Me too. I'm a big fan. By the way, great article in the New York Times today. Bo Jackson talking about what it could be like being Shohei Ohtani. Not trying to compare him with some of the all-time greats, but kind of like the mythical creatures of sports like Bo
that.
Jackson. And they did a great story with him. So I'd recommend everybody to go check that article out.
Very nice. Fours across the board. Back to wrap up hour one next. Sports Talk continues. 600 ESPN El Paso. Back here on Sports Talk, 8 in front of 5. Let's go back to the phones right now, 505-6009. Here's Ray. He'll wrap up the hour with us. Go ahead, Ray.
Hey, Steve, how you doing? Long time no see. I just wanted to say you brought up something when you guys were talking about wrestling. That's something that really brought up some memories for me.
Good.
Your past call and what you guys were talking about earlier in the week. I don't know if you do you remember one of the birthplaces of professional wrestling back in L.A., where I'm from, back in the Olympic Auditorium.
And that's where Jimmy,
good old days. I do remember the Olympic Auditorium back in the 70s and 80s.
Jimmy Lennon was the ring announcer. And, you know, back then it was guys like Victor Rivera, Bull Ramos, Chavo Guerrero.
Yep.
That's when Roddy Piper came out. You know, obviously you had Ric Flair back then. Andre the Giant started coming out a little bit back then. And that's where he got his start. But those guys, that's when Lucha Libre was, you know, a weekly event.
Man, I'm telling you, that's
wrestling days.
You bring up some good memories. Some good memories.
Yeah, those are when you could actually think, like, was wrestling, was it real? You know, then it moved into WWF and WWE. But, you know, it was exciting. It was exciting going to WrestleMania, see Hulk Hogan alive. And when he came out there with the Iron Sheik and those back in those days when they first got going. But those were fun, you know, going from the Olympic Auditorium to the Sports Arena in L.A.
Yep.
It was always a packed house, that's for sure.
Nice.
Hey, but when you guys were talking about Ohtani, I totally agree. I think his eyes are on L.A. because from what I've read out there, and I was out there recently reading some L.A. Times articles, and he likes it out there. He really does. He likes the way he's treated, not to mention if he goes to L.A. like you had mentioned at El Nomo. He would definitely be one of those people that I wouldn't say he would be the face of the franchise because you still got Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman there, but he would be, you know, the three-headed monster right there. And you've got such a huge Asian clientele that he would bring in. They're dying for somebody else like him to come in fill those seats in Dodger Stadium.
No doubt about it. That
would be huge.
No doubt.
One last thing, you know, you guys, I'm sure you've been watching the NBA playoffs, and, you know, I'm looking forward to tomorrow night, the game with the Lakers and the Grizzlies, you know, seeing how LeBron reacts to the comments by Dylan Brooks. But it's got to be more of, you know, a team concept where, hey, you guys, we can't let this guy get away with this as a whole. Not just, okay, give me the ball. I'm going to show you what I'm going to do. That's what happens if he starts to take this thing one-on-one, which I don't think he won't. I think he's a much, much smarter player than that. I think that they'll come out on top.
All right. Good predictions. Ray, always good to hear from you. Thanks for the phone call. Good stuff as we wrap up hour one here on the program. When we come back, plenty more, including David Nurse, about 25 minutes away. The former NBA assistant coach will join us, and we'll talk about his new book as Sports Talk continues, 600 ESPN El Paso. Welcome back, everybody, as we continue here on Sports Talk. I'm excited about our next guest because he's got a brand new book out, and definitely something that we are going to get a chance to talk to. Do It! The Life-Changing Power of Taking Action. It's going to be released here in a couple of weeks. And joining us right now is former NBA assistant coach and basketball player David Nurse. David, welcome aboard. Good to have you on in El Paso. How are you doing today?
Man, I'm doing great. Great to be with you guys. Thank you for having me on.
Thanks for being here. By the way, congratulations. That book is coming out here in a couple of weeks. You got to be pretty excited about that, aren't you?
Yeah. You know what? It's a long process to get to this point. And so now I feel like anybody that I talk to on the street, before I even introduce myself to them, I tell them about Do It, the Life-Changing Power of Taking Action, coming out May 2nd. It's kind of become, you know, one of those things you just try to let everybody know about, and hopefully everybody in El Paso will go check it out.
Well, there you go. I mean, that's really what it's all about. And it's funny because you are an optimization coach in addition to having spent a career in basketball. For our listeners who don't know what an optimization coach is, David, tell them a little bit about it.
Yeah, so really it is figuring out what your potential is and how to reach that potential, putting together a game plan, both physically in whatever your skill set is. And my background has been in basketball and helping NBA players, but then also in your mindset. So both skill set, physical, and psychology, the mindset, and basically figuring out what it's going to take to reach your full potential through overcoming roadblocks, through becoming the most unshakable confidence you can have, through the daily success habits that you put together. So there's a whole lot of different things that goes into it, but at the core, it is just being the best version of yourself and improving, pouring into yourself 1% every single day.
David, you're less than 15 years removed from your college basketball playing career, even before going into coaching. Was this something you were thinking about back then? And if so, did you help it? Did you help to use that to get the most out of your ability back in your playing career?
Man, that's a great question. And to be honest with you, I was never thinking about this. When I was in college playing college basketball at a mid-major, Western Illinois, I thought I was playing in the NBA. And it couldn't be further from the truth of that. But honestly, it helped me because I wasn't the most athletically gifted. I had to figure out all the, what I call like the Steve Nash details, little how do you improve yourself, watching the film, all that that you pour into your mind. So that ultimately when I got cut from playing professionally in Spain, it wasn't a, well, my life is over. It was actually leading to something greater. And that's what a big challenge for people is when they get fired and where something is taken away, they think it's over, but it's actually everything that you have done, everything that I had done to pour into my playing ability, into my mentality, into my IQ of the game, wasn't for myself, but it was to help other players with more God-given ability, 7-foot height and athleticism to play in the NBA. So it's making that pivot of a door closing is actually an opportunity for something greater to come. And that's kind of how my story got going with coaching. And then I realized, you know what, like I love coaching, and it took me 5 years of running my own basketball camps. And then the Nets came calling to have me come on as their assistant and their player development coach. And then a new head coach came in, so I got fired from that. But once again, it led to something better, training NBA players individually, working with over 200 players on mindset development, coaches, CEOs, now I coach, speaking to corporations, big companies, and writing books. So it's just that whole looking at things of like, well, what's the perspective you're going to look at it? Like it's woe is me, it's taken away, or hey, it's an opportunity for something greater to come.
David, as far as some of the players that you have specifically coached when it comes to the mindset training, I was noticing that Norman Powell was one of the players that you have coached in your past. Now, yesterday's game, maybe people, those who didn't watch it, wouldn't realize that the Clippers were very much in that game against the Suns, and they were without Kawhi Leonard, also without Paul George. But it was guys like Norman Powell willing that team to, making it really competitive when the Clippers, talent-wise, were kind of outmatched in that one. What's it like working with guys like Norman Powell and seeing them do it on big stages like this in the playoffs?
Oh, man, it's incredibly just fulfilling for me to be able to see Norm do that, knowing how much work he has put in, both to his skills, but that dude is, man, he just eats it up, everything on his mindset development, and now coming to the point where he is literally unshakable. So I've been working with him since his UCLA days, and he would waver up and down with his confidence. He'd waver in, if he had a good game, he'd be great to be around. If not, how players do, they rate themselves on the results. But Norm, he's been so great working on the mindset tools that we've implemented, and he doesn't even worry about points. He has no idea how many points he's averaging. He has no idea what his shooting percentage is. We focus solely on what I call the system plus the process. The system is what does Norm do at his best, and that is catch and shoot threes, and it's attacking the rim. If you watch these games, that's all he's doing. And that's we just keep working on that. We watch film on that. How do you get to be the best you can possibly be in your God-given strength ability? The process is the daily habits that you put in. Are you working on it daily? Are you watching the film daily? Are you pouring into yourself? So your system, knowing who you are, plus your process, the daily habits, equals the results. And Norm has seen immense results from making that transition early in his career in Toronto when he was coming off the bench and really not having much of a role to now becoming one of the most dynamic and efficient players in the NBA. And it's all credit to him because, he just keeps asking for more, wanting to study more, wanting to learn more. He's just like the players that get this, it's an unlock to another part of their game that they really didn't even know existed, to be honest.
David Nurse with us here on Sports Talk. His brand new book, Do It, The Life-Changing Power of Taking Action, is available to pre-order now on Amazon.com. In fact, if you want to learn more about David, you can go to his website at davidnurse.com. And that even takes you on the link directly. Just click books. It'll take you directly to the pre-order for the brand new book, Do It. When you spent time in the NBA and you talked about the Nets prior to getting fired by New Jersey, you're around a lot of guys with a ton of talent. You tell me, when you look at their games and really the NBA in general, do you feel that most of these guys all have the skill set to play and have long careers in the league? But as you mentioned, the mental game is the key to so many players thriving, and not everybody has it, and not everybody can develop that mental game the way you just described.
Oh, you are, that is a, such a great question, Steve. You're spot on. I've been able to be around so many players that you said, hey, they got all the potential in the world, or the players that don't have all the potential, but they do all have like amazing high-level skill set. Now, some have more attributes to it to already start off, but it's pretty much it's very close. And I've gotten to the point of being around players for the first 5 to 10 minutes of a workout and telling you if they are able to have a all-star level ability in their career. And I'll just give you some examples here. So I worked with Shea Alexander right out of college for his pre-draft. Now, Shea was coming out of college, and not a whole lot of people knew about Shea. He's kind of overlooked, this gangly kid from Kentucky. But the first workout of pre-draft, and we try to crush them at pre-draft, just break them, you know, see what they're made of. He went for 2 hours, just killing every drill, hard as could be, going at it. And afterwards, most players just, you know, they pass out on the ground because they're so worn out. Shea comes up to me and says, hey, when are we going tonight? And that's when I knew he was different. And that's what I call insatiable drive. It's the difference of, does the player drag me to the gym, or do I have to drag them to the gym? And I won't say a whole lot of names here on the other side of it, but I've been around a lot of top 10 picks who had all the potential, but it was, I would have to try to drag them to the gym. They didn't love the work and the unseen hours when the lights were off. I'll give you another one. Domantas Sabonis, I've worked with for a long time. During COVID, when everything was shut down, he came out to L.A., and we found these, like, raggedy gyms and Jewish community centers that had broken hoops. And at 7 a.m. every morning, we'd be in there. He'd be in there. There was no Instagram posting. There was no cameras. Nobody knew about these workouts going on. He'd already gotten paid. He made a big contract. But he just is so loves the work, loves the grind of it. And that insatiable drive is a big-time difference maker. But then it's also, too, like we say, hey, can somebody perform under pressure? So there's going to be pressure-packed situations, but the different mindset tools that I teach these guys and work with them, they're able to rise above and overcome, similar to what you would think like a Michael Jordan, a Kobe, a Steph has, where they're never hesitating. They're never doubting their abilities. And I'll tell you what, at that high a level, that's a huge, huge difference maker.
In your book, you talk about some of the archetypes that the action archetypes, and maybe 9 reasons that people don't take action. Mm-hmm. One of them, you talk about the burned. Can you tell us a little bit about that one and how it maybe relates with the blamer, who is a nut, which is another archetype that you list as well?
Yeah, so there are 9 main reasons why people don't take action, and everything is based in fear. Fear of the results. Fear of failure, fear of the uncertainty. But they're broken down into different archetypes. And the point of the book is to read it and become aware of what is holding you back from where you are today to where you want to be tomorrow. Everybody has something. That gap, that bridge that will cover that gap is through taking action. So the burned, think about this. You're less likely to take action if you've done it in the past. You've got burned by a business partner. You got burnt in a relationship, so you're never going to put your heart out there again. We all have this burnt. Our past leads us to where our present is today. So if you are living in that burnt mode, you aren't going to take action because you are basically essentially blaming the burned. And there's there's a thing called traumatic associated age regression. So what this is, unless you are aware and you just come to terms and accept that burnt time in your life, you will be frozen in that time. 70% of adults in America suffer from traumatic associated age regression. It's like if you had a bad childhood and you go to your childhood home, you slip back into that type of that frame, that feeling of you're not good enough or you're not worthy. So there's different things you have to become aware of. And I give these examples of what's actually happening in the brain and the neurological system. And like, here's another one for you that I think is really good for people to understand how powerful perspective is. The thing called upward counterfactual thinking and downward counterfactual thinking. Upward counterfactual thinking is you look back on the situation and you think, oh, man, well, what if I'd have done it this way? Or, oh, I should have done it this way. And you're living in constant regret. And that's the worst thing you can live in. But the downward counterfactual thinking is you look back on the past and you're like, you know what? It could have been worse. Like for me getting fired by the Brooklyn Nets. Like, you know what, that actually led me to what I'm doing now. Or take for a small example, you get in a little fender bender and you think, well, you know what, it could have been worse. I could have got my car totaled. It's just the way that you look at these situations that happened to you in your past. Those that will determine who you are in your future.
More with author David Nurse as we continue here on Sports Talk. But first, let's send it back to Adrian. He's got a bottom of the hour Sports Center update. And David Nurse joining us here on the program. He's got other books that have come out as well in the past, Pivot and Go and Breakthrough, and now his latest, which comes out here on May the 2nd, Do It, The Life-Changing Power of Taking Action. All right, so as you've transitioned from basketball to now speaking, coaching, you've got a podcast, you write books, you're doing a lot of stuff, talking to us today. Do you still get a chance to watch basketball? And if so, do you enjoy the game now as much as when you were very much involved on the bench?
Oh, man, absolutely. I'm a nut for the game, and I watch a ton of basketball. I mean, I now watch more of the players that I work with, and those become my players that I'm really cheering for and getting behind. And I mean, I definitely miss the aspect of being with a team. There's nothing that really can replicate that type of feeling, but you know, I'm just a nut for continued development and being able to have a touch on these players, watching them, like seeing a Norm Powell go for 42 or seeing Domas have a great season or seeing a rookie that I work with, Keegan Murray, setting records, making threes for rookies. Like that's where I get my juice out of the competitive nature of seeing the guys that I pour into go out there and do it on a huge stage.
Meanwhile, your Uncle Nick was in the news today, but not for the right reasons, David. Did you get a chance to talk to him a little bit? And, you know, he's probably somebody that could also use a little pep talk from you when it's all said and done.
Hey, I haven't talked to Nick yet, but one thing I know about Nick is he is going to land on his feet and then some. And that dude is one of the most incredible leaders and just positive guys. Like when we're talking about perspective on things, of doors closing, I know there's something even better for him coming. And if I'm an NBA GM right now, and I've known Nick obviously my whole life, and I've been around him at every single level he's been at, over in Brighton, England, at the Iowa Energy, in these leagues that don't even exist anymore. He knows how to win, and he knows how to lead people. So if I'm a GM out there right now, like, I mean, we're in Texas right on this radio. If you're Houston, you're going after Nick hardcore, I would say. So I think it'll be great.
Plus, the job he did with the Raptors was unbelievable. Look, he was Coach of the Year. He won a championship. Not to mention, he helped develop Pascal Siakam into one of the better forwards in the league. And we know about Siakam because he played up the road in Las Cruces for New Mexico State.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, think about it. Fred VanVleet, how many undrafted guys go in there and become household names in the NBA? I would have to throw it back to Masai, like, get him some more talent. I mean, look at these teams that are in the playoffs right now. Like, shoot, the Nuggets with talent, the Clippers with talent. I'm putting it back on Masai.
David, I want to ask you specifically about somebody you worked with previously, Jeremy Lin. We all know what he did with Linsanity and how big that was for the entire city of New York. What was it like working for somebody like that who really rose to stardom in such a big way and made such a historical impact on his home country?
Man, he's one of the best human beings I have ever been around. Just not even talking about basketball or anything, but just the person that he is. And how he cares for others. So I've seen him just grow immensely in just feeling comfortable in his own skin. The person like that he has become and the leader that he has become for his Taiwanese people and everybody, really. But one thing that I know he did struggle with through that time, and if he was being honest, he would tell you he would never want to go through Linsanity again, because instead of living in the appreciation for, man, I'm at the top, this is a great moment, I can just rest at ease in this moment that's going on, he was living in the what ifs. What if I can't keep this up? What will people think of me? What if I don't keep this pace going? And it's so real as an example for all of us in life. We think about that in our jobs. Well, what if I don't make enough money? Well, what if my kids? What if, what if, what if? And we get so caught up in these what ifs, these worst case scenario thinkings that never really end up happening. So Jeremy has taught me a lot in that frame of mind of just, you know, being content with where you're at, no matter where you're at. And then one thing that I've seen from him and just being around him is he gets mobbed everywhere he goes. Like, I've been at his house working out in his garage gym with the garage door basically down, and he has people coming up looking under the garage asking if it's Jeremy, if he can get a picture with him, which is wild. But he's the nicest guy. He'll take a picture with everybody. He'll sign autographs because he knows that that could be the biggest moment of that person's life, and he's going to treat every person like they are extremely important. And I love that about him.
David, you know what we need to do with this book? We need to make sure that every single men's basketball program in Division I college basketball has a copy of this, or multiple copies, and maybe this will in fact keep the transfer portal under control, because now athletes will have a chance to read it, and instead of just jumping ship and going from school to school like we have right now in college basketball, they'll realize there are solutions to certain issues that come up in conflicts, and they'll find ways to make the best of it, stick around, and not have to transfer out like we have so far in college basketball.
I totally agree. I agree. Every college basketball program should definitely have this book. But it's funny you say that, because now when things get hard, people just look for excuses and they're blaming it. That's a huge one right now. Or they feel like they're not getting the right opportunities. And it's a weird world we live in. Like, I'm friends with a lot of college basketball coaches like Nate Oates, I've known since he was a high school coach, and Fran McCaffrey and Steve Alford. And it's just the wildest time in college basketball now because of this. Hey, if it's not working right away, let's just leave. Let's just go somewhere else. There's a lot to be said with sticking something out. Now, I'm not saying you have to stick something out and just do it if it's not working for you for years and years and years and years. But the power of not quitting and not giving up, like, that's a superpower. Because now in this day and age that we live in, if success doesn't come for people quickly, they just give up. They're like, oh, well, it didn't happen in 6 months. What? Look at my Uncle Nick. It took him 27 years of coaching to become an NBA head coach. It takes time, and it's a superpower to know that it takes time.
The book again, Do It, The Life-Changing Power of Taking Action, from David Nurse, who's been joining us here on the program. You want more information? You can go to his website, davidnurse.com. Hey, enjoyed the conversation. Great to talk to you. And once again, congratulations on the book, and look forward to having you back on the show, David.
Hey, absolutely. I really appreciate you guys. Anytime.
You too. From David Nurse, right back to KVIA News. We'll do that next. Come back, wrap up hour number two. Sports Talk continues, 600 ESPN El Paso. Along with Adrian Broaddus, Alicia Barón, Steve Kaplowitz with you. Ray Flores is back with us right now for another go-round. Excited to have Ray here, as
yes,
a week from now, it's the NFL draft, and then after that, Everybody gets to sign undrafted free agent contracts. They go to teams. They have a chance to try to make a club. And first off, great to see you. You're looking better than ever. And
yes,
tell me a little bit about how the last few months have been going for you, Ray.
Man, it's been real busy, man. It's been real hectic, but it's just been a blessing. So, you know, I was telling you earlier, the last 3 months since the first week of January, I've been out in Tampa, Florida training with Cooper Sports Performance out there. Shout out Coop, man. I've just been really locked in. So out there was 2-a-days every day, just getting ready for my pro day. Really locked in and just 110% every day, man. And I got to work out with some great athletes that come from similar backgrounds like me, playing at the big time Division I level, and then also some pro guys. I was throwing with Mike White every day and Scotty Miller. So, you know, that was a real cool experience. And just been locked in. And since pro day, it's been the same thing, man. Nothing's really changed. Keeping the routine and just staying focused and getting ready to hopefully, God willing, get that phone call.
Tell me about what the 2-a-days were like. Give me an example of pretty much from when you woke up to when you left, exactly how these workouts would go.
Yeah, so let's just say Monday morning, you know, I'm going to wake up at 6:45, get up. Where I was staying at, it was an extended stay hotel, and thank God they had a hotel breakfast because I can't cook to save my life. So I eat the hotel breakfast every day. That was like at 7, by 7:15 on the road to the facilities. So in the morning, we usually do either speed work or change of direction work, so some type of heavy sprints and explosiveness, and work our starts. That would usually go for like an hour, hour and a half. And that was pretty strenuous. You know, my muscles would be tired, be pretty gassed after. But not as much as conditioning. It's just so much effort you're putting into each rep that you're going to be tired. So after that, go home. Got about 3 hours of downtime. So we were eating our meal preps that they would provide us. So just made sure I hit my at least 2 meals before. Just get a little bit of downtime, try to rest my body. And then 2 o'clock came around. You got to get up, get the juice going because we had a pretty tough lift. Those lifts would go about an hour and a half, two also. And hit the lift. After the lift, make sure you do your recovery, your stretches. I would usually take a ice bath, some type of ice, just to recover, or do the Theragun or some boots. And then just go home. It's already 4 or 5. Eat a plate of dinner. Maybe talk to the family and just reset and get ready to go. I was in bed by 8 every day.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you did that for three months.
Three months.
Did you get weekends off or did you work out on weekends?
So the weekends, thank God they were off, but it was Monday through Friday straight. So those 2 days were Monday through Friday. And then Saturday, Sunday, you had the downtime. Saturdays in the morning, we'd have some type of maybe a yoga instructor go, or we'd have some type of light tissue. Like we get stretched out by a guy, by some type of PT. So that was in the mornings. And then usually afternoons were off, and Sundays were for sure we're free. So
safe to say you're in the best shape of your life after these 3 months. Does it even compare with what you did during your playing days?
I do think I'm in the best shape of my life physically, but I think at UTEP, you know, those summer workouts, that cardio is something else. And my brother comes home every day in the spring, tells me what he did, and I'm just, I think that's the only thing I don't miss is the summer and the spring of conditioning. So other than that, I think I am most definitely best shape of my life, biggest I've been for sure.
Yeah, your arms look huge. I mean, do you feel that right now physically? You definitely have seen the change from just going out and working out and lifting 3 months in a row and what it's been like for you.
Yeah, no, most definitely. I feel like me in high school and early college, I felt like I really had a hard time, you know, putting on muscle and mass. And most of it's because obviously I wasn't eating like I'm supposed to. I wasn't putting the right nutrients in my body. So, you know, that 3 months of consistently every day eating those meals and then as well the good workouts. And then also, you know, football wise, we're doing a lot of, you know, we had a shout out a receiver school out there. My boy Sean Gavin, we do a receiver drills with him. My cuts, my movements, my hips, I feel so much looser, so much more elusive. So I feel as an athlete in general, I feel, you know, the best I've ever felt for sure.
Very nice.
Ray, I want to ask you specifically again about Cooper Sports Performance and Rehab. I'm looking them up on Instagram, and it's not like they have a ton of, like, you know, they're not trying to flex that much, but the proof is in the pudding. Look at all the players who are either in the NFL, who are playing in college right now, who they've worked with. That's got to be encouraging for you, knowing that you're working with some of the best out there.
Yeah, no, that was really the selling point when he sat down and had a phone call with me. He showed me, he had his brochure and he had all the guys that it went through there. And it's all guys that are in the same position as me, right? He had his fair share of guys that went to, you know, the NFL combine, but most of these guys are like me looking for a undrafted free agent type of deal. And it's so every guy I was with out there was very relatable. And then, you know, I was with Mike White, throwing with Mike White every day. So having his perspective, being able to get his angle on all the stuff and, you know, advice going into these training camps coming up, it was just something that I could have been more grateful for because I feel like I'm a step ahead just because of that.
following up specifically on the recovery, we're just average Joes over here. So we don't know about cryo. We don't know about the boots. We don't know about the ice baths and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about those kind of things.
Yeah. So out there, the recovery wasn't like too crazy. I mean, the biggest thing for me, ice baths. I'm a big ice bath guy. I've been in like that since UTEP. But as much as I don't like it, it's a necessity. I feel like my body needs it, especially after a long day. And then also the compression boots, the Normatex. I'm sure you guys have seen them. A lot of athletes use them. The big boots you put on, like space boots, is what they look like. Just those, and then my Theragun, the little gun. That's pretty much, that was my routine every day. And then a lot of stretching, a lot of banded stretching and static stretching a lot every day. After the workouts, go home, do a little on my own. So it was definitely, I was locked in, most locked in I've ever been, probably.
Now, food-wise, what was the typical meals like for you? Let me hear what you had.
Plain Jane chicken and rice every
day. Simple as that.
Yeah, they would give us some sauces, and that would really add some flavor to it, like a barbecue or some type of like a Dijon mustard or buffalo sauce, and really, at least kind of for a second, get you out of, you know, thinking you're eating the same thing. But it was pretty much chicken and rice.
So chicken and rice every day for 3 months. Yeah. But you did have at least the breakfast at the hotel. So you lived at a hotel for 3 months.
Yeah, pretty much an extended stay hotel. Yes,
all right, sir. That's all right. That means you probably get whatever they call eggs with
eggs.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure.
The powdered eggs with something that resembles meat, and you know, you could just have some fruit with that and be good to go. Get started on that.
Yeah, exactly. The breakfast was like five different things they would make. So obviously, I was there for the 3 months, so I ate the five things, and then it would rotate to the beginning. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Same thing, never changed. I knew Monday what I was going to eat, so just kind of stuck to that. You know, I felt like I took eating regular eggs for granted when I got home. Just eating a regular chicken egg was fantastic.
And for would lunch and dinner both be chicken and rice, or would that only be one meal?
So most of the days it was like two of the meals out of the day. Cloudy, probably like three a day, was chicken and rice. And then towards the end, we would get surprised once we gave maybe one steak and rice meal, but that was kind of special occasion type of thing. So
how about seafood? Did they ever give you fish or no?
No, we didn't get. I was hoping we'd get some type of salmon or tilapia, but we didn't. So chicken and rice. But I mean, I'm not a picky eater, so it was.
There you go.
I don't think we'll throw it back pretty easy.
Ray Flores with us here on Sports Talk as we continue. So you prepare, you get ready now. Tell me about the pro day itself. I want to hear about this. I know it was windy, and you know, you had to run against the wind, run with the wind. But how would you rate the way your pro day went with everybody out there in front of scouts?
So the pro day. I mean, it was windy. It felt like it's like that every year. I personally thought I did good. We have everything on video, so you know, I know all the teams are going to see it and they're going to time it themselves. So, you know, I'm not too worried. The numbers that I got back wasn't what I had wanted. So, personally, I would give it maybe like a 7. But I think I stood out. I think I looked good. I looked the part. You know, when we did our drills, I felt really good. I thought I looked good. So, I'm pretty confident in the way it ended up going for me. So, now I'm just excited, hoping to get that phone call, like I said.
How fast did you run your 40 in the wind and against the wind? Let me hear.
We're gonna keep that under the rug, Steve. I can't say that on air.
Oh, for crying out loud. Okay, but here's the thing, and this is what drives me crazy. This is really what drives me crazy, okay? You've played at UTEP now.
Yeah, yes, sir.
For 4 years.
Yeah.
There is so much tape on you against everybody for what you've been able to do.
Mm-hmm.
So if teams have scouted you,
yeah,
they already know exactly what they're getting, which makes me crazy with the pro day, because why should one day in bad conditions have any influence on 4 years of your body of work at UTEP?
Yeah, no, I agree with you 100%. I'm the same way. You know, I had a guy tell me too that supposedly, you know, if you have the film, there's a bad pro day can never hurt you. But, you know, deep down, I feel like that's a misconception, because I feel like it leads up to this, and I feel like a lot of people physically just look at these numbers, which I don't agree with, and I don't think the numbers, you know, define the person or the athlete that's running. So, you know, I'm not trying to stress too much about it. I think, like you said, I have good film, and I think that's what they have, and that's what they see every day when they turn it on. So, God willing, I'll be fine.
All throughout this process, too, when it comes to the pro day, Ray, I know that the agent process has to be, you know, something that's really big for you guys. What has that process been like from you from when the season ended, hiring an agent and then working with them throughout this time?
Yeah. So for me, currently, I still have not signed with an agent. I've talked to a good amount. After season didn't get in, I didn't really get to talking to anybody when I was out in Tampa. I was talking to one guy actually really, really close to signing, and then things just kind of fell apart. I don't know if he had already signed too many guys, but we ended up, you know, not closing the deal. So at the moment, you know, I had some agencies reach out, and I reached out to a couple too, but so far nothing. And I mean, it doesn't hurt me to not have one, but having one definitely helps you. So I mean, if something happens, if someone reaches out, and I'm willing to see what's going on. But I mean, as of right now, I don't have one, and I think I'm going to be all right.
Well, and as far as the way the draft process works, if you don't get drafted and you do get to choose which mm-hmm. team that you would like to work out and yeah. sign with as an undrafted free agent, you don't really need an agent for that, do you?
No, you don't. From what I've heard, I mean, the agents can help maybe a little market you a little more than what you already have. But like we said already, pretty much it's your film. Your film is what's going to get you, get you those opportunities. So, you know, the agent can only do so much. And I think it's more of a necessity for those guys that are going to be drafted, you know, in those top like five rounds, I would say, mm-hmm. from what I've heard from the older guys that have been through it. But no, yeah, exactly. So, you know, if I get multiple calls from different teams about, you know, undrafted free agent deals, it's up to me to decide. So I'm excited for that. I'm excited to see what happens.
I'm looking at a guy like Nick Needham, mm-hmm. undrafted free agent, yeah. made the most of everything with exactly. the Dolphins. And you look at him, what he's turned into. And now he's coming back from the injury, but he's still with Miami. And, you know, to me, Nick Needham is the perfect undrafted free agent story for any UTEP athlete.
Yeah, no, exactly. So that's someone that I was able to play with. I had the opportunity to play with my first 2 years. And someone that I got to see his hard work and himself and what he put in every day and what he put out and what he got out of it. You know, I saw his process after he graduated too, and how he was just like me, you know, an undrafted, someone from a smaller school, a group of five school, and just hungry for an opportunity, and he most definitely took advantage of that.
Yes, he did. All right, more with Ray Flores as we continue here on Sports Talk, quarter past 600. It's ESPN El Paso. Back here on Sports Talk, back with Ray Flores, 19 past, as we continue on the show. If you want to weigh in, if you've got a question, you can tweet the show. You can call the program, 505-6009. Chime in with us as well. Alicia, if you've got any questions for Ray, you can fire away as well. You're a big part of the show with Adrian, so don't worry about it.
I do have a question.
Yeah,
so what
was
the toughest part about you going to Florida and leaving family here since you were at UTEP most of your time?
Yeah, I mean, definitely off the bat was being away from home. At UTEP, I lived at home the whole five and a half years I was there. So never been away from home, never had to live on my own. So definitely that hit the wall real fast. But the fact that I had meal preps and didn't have to cook was a lifesaver. I learned how to do my own laundry.
Nice.
Wait a minute.
You've never
progress.
Done. Hang on 1 second. Stop the show. You just finished after all these years. You've never done your own laundry. Your parents have
no,
never.
I've done it. But like the laundry machines over there were like old school laundry machines. Like,
yep.
At the laundry.
The coin operated laundry.
Exactly
machines.
Those. So
right.
I had to make a phone call and ask for a little bit of help. But after the first day, I figured it out and it was smooth sails after that.
That's good. All right. Yes, but in the beginning, you looked at it and you were a little intimidated.
Yeah, I was. I can't lie to you.
Okay.
It's okay. He's a mechanical engineering major. He's got a degree in all this. He's got this.
Yeah, exactly. You should be able to fix the thing instead of having to worry about operating it.
Exactly.
So that's good. Did you see any Tampa Bay Lightning games while you're out there in the Tampa area working out?
No, I wanted to. We had planned to go as a group, me and the guys, and then something came up. But I did watch the Cowboy game, the playoff game. I was able to get some tickets. And
that's cool.
I mean, we lost a week later, so it didn't really mean much. But it was cool to go to a playoff game. It was definitely exciting.
What was that stadium like?
It was awesome. It was awesome. The environment was crazy. It was packed. I'd never been to an away Cowboys game, and Cowboy fans travel really well.
You got a chance to see Tom Brady's last game.
Yeah, I did. Now that I'm thinking about it, I did. Yeah.
That ticket. Even if it's a digital ticket, figure out a way to print it and save that ticket. You need that.
Yeah, it's in my phone somewhere.
There you go. So as you were talking to NFL teams, mm-hmm. getting ready for a draft week next week, who are some of the teams that have reached out and expressed interest in your abilities?
So currently I haven't talked to anybody, but back in January, our NFL liaison at UTEP had told me, you know, the biggest teams that are currently interested and like me a lot are the Eagles, the Vikings, and the Raiders. Those three are the ones I've heard of that are big fans. They see me as a utility guy and a big plug-and-play guy, and they think I could really make the roster if given a chance. So, and I'm hoping I get a phone call from any of those three for sure. Anybody would be a blessing, but those 3 years, what I've heard from so far.
Yeah.
Ray, specifically when it comes to the, like, if you get invited to a camp or something like that from one of these NFL teams, and then after, what if an XFL team came out to you and said, hey, look, we want you to be our full-time guy. We want you to play in this league. Would you entertain offers from alternate leagues other than the NFL?
Yeah, you know, I've sat down and talked about that, you know, with my parents and my brother. Yeah, I think definitely the first year. So obviously the goal right now is to make an NFL roster, but definitely make an NFL training camp for sure. After that, definitely CFL for sure. And XFL, I mean, I think, most definitely I want to give the XFL a shot. I still feel like I have a lot in me. I still feel like, you know, I can definitely help any team win. So, to answer your question, I'd definitely entertain those offers for sure.
What if The Rock showed up at your house? Would that pretty much be...
that'll seal the deal.
Yeah, that would probably seal the deal.
Yeah.
So, Dwayne, if you're listening, that's all you got to do is show up at the Flores house, and that'll be the end of that.
Yeah. Would you consider a position change? If somebody's like, hey, I like your speed. I like what you could do. Can you do this defensively, or are you sticking offense primarily?
I mean... No, I mean, if they're going to give me a position and a spot on the team and they want me to play something else, I mean, definitely, I'll give it a shot. Last time I played defense was freshman year of high school for, like, a game. So I could do it. I think I'm a well-rounded athlete. I'd definitely entertain it, but I don't think I'm going to be asked to play defense. But
what position do you think you're going to be gravitating to the most in the pro level? Because you could play receiver, you could play running back. So what do you think would be the position for you?
That's hard. I mean, I compare my game a lot to, you know, Deebo Samuel and Cordell Patterson. I think I'm definitely like the exact same player. But, you know, ideally, I think if to make a team, I think they would like my sophomore year on the team, I was a third down back. I caught a lot of balls out of the backfield. I think that's the role that I would, that I feel like teams are going to want me to be, you know, a back with hands. But I mean, I don't know. That's a good question. I could play slot. I could play outside. I could play in the backfield. So, I mean, that's three positions right there. So, wherever, to be honest. But what I've thought about it, I mean, I feel like it's going to be some type of running back, the third down kind of back, from what I think.
So you could be like a utility role offensively, yeah. And then maybe you could be like Turpin from the Cowboys and be like their primary punt returner.
Yeah, no, exactly. So the thing that helps me a lot too is my special team experience, because I was, you know, 4 years of that too. So definitely kick returner, punt returner, definitely just like that, like you said, like Turpin.
That's interesting. Now, how many years did you return punts at UTEP?
Punts? I've been the backup for the last 2 years, and I've caught two, so I guess 2 years.
So, but kickoff returns,
I've been kickoff
regularly. Punt returns, it's, I don't know. I mean,
punts are different, though. That's a different ball game.
It is definitely. That's right. That's right.
I'll tell Marcus, like, that's your theme, Marcus. Just make sure you don't get hurt, because that's your theme.
Yeah, I'll never forget. So years and years ago, one of my buddies played for UTEP in the mid to late 90s. His name was Chris Taylor.
Okay.
And he was actually returning punts when UTEP played Oregon in the Sun Bowl, probably around, I don't know, it was like around 97 or 98. And he told this great story, because he said that the kid from Oregon punted the ball. And it was such a beautiful punt that he looked up and just, like, he was, like, watching this ball, like, seemed like it was floating in the sky forever. So by the time it came down to him, misses the ball, gets blown up. I think Oregon gets the fumble, and either they punched it in or something like that. And I think that was, like, the last time he was asked to return a punt in a college football game. So it was a great story, just because he described it. Just, it was one of those punts that was so majestic.
Yeah.
He got caught up looking at it, admiring it, and then by the time it tried to come down, right through his hands.
No, that's definitely a thing. You know, the times I was out there, it just feels like you see the ball, and it feels like everything just blanks out, and it's just you and the ball in the air, and it takes forever for it to come down. And my first one, that they had me out there to catch, we were running like a kind of like a trick play where the actual returner would fake catch it, and I would actually catch it on the other side of the field.
Mm-hmm.
But the ball ended up tailing to the middle of the field, so I was chasing it, and then I ended up muffing it. But I was able to jump on it, but that was terrifying. It's just you and the ball, and it's like,
yeah,
you're telling yourself, don't drop it, and it's coming.
No, I'm hearing
you. It's definitely a different ball game.
Yeah, plus once you, if you don't handle it, then they can blow you up during the play. At least if you fair catch it and you don't drop it, they can't touch you.
Yeah, exactly.
That makes a lot of sense. Now, you said something interesting earlier in this conversation. You said NFL liaison at UTEP.
Yeah.
Who is that? We didn't even know that UTEP has an NFL liaison.
Well, that's just one of the coaches. So for us, well, the last few years it's been Coach Neely, but I don't know who it is now. But usually it's one of the coaches.
And their job is to talk to scouts, because scouts do come throughout the season, whether it's spring camp, fall camp, games themselves, practices, and they develop relationships with these scouts over the years.
Exactly. So our NFL liaison, the scouts that would come before practice, and we would see them before practice. They would go talk to them, talk to him. Talk to, you know, strength coaches. They would go talk to the trainers, you know, just to get whoever they want to, you know, talk about, just get a breakdown of, you know, how they are as a person, as an athlete, you know, what's their medical history, just stuff like that. But you would see him all the time. But, yeah, usually he's the one that makes those relationships.
As a former UTEP football player,
yes,
and you can speak from experience, Ray, would you like to see in the future more NFL scouts attend UTEP Pro Day? Would that be something that you think would be pretty beneficial to future minors as they try to prepare for the NFL?
Yeah, most definitely. I think that's just something that, you know, kind of every year you see it and you wonder why. Because, you know, I can tell you every day in fall camp and during the season, there's scouts, different teams every day, multiple scouts, and you see them with your own eyes. You could ask all the guys that we've played with. And so, you know, you expect, you know, these same guys to be there your pro day, and, you know, you only see a couple, and it is disappointing. But they just try to tell us that, you know, everyone's going to see your numbers. Everyone's going to get your video from your pro day. So, you know, don't worry about it. If they want you, they're going to see it. So, you know, that's the hope we're riding on right now. And, you know, I trust them and I believe them.
I also wish, though, that if there was a way for UTEP to reach out to a lot of these scouts and try to find a day that would work for everybody, yeah, and then almost like plan it around them, then you have an opportunity, because now you're going to get maximum eyes on everybody in person. It's one thing watching tape. Mm-hmm. It's something else if scouts are there seeing it in person.
Yeah. So what I heard of the way it works is, you know, everyone's doing their pro day in order, so these scouts are going, you know, kind of like down the street,
like a circuit,
to each school. Exactly. So like it's us, and they would go to some other big Texas school, and then maybe like A&M or University of Texas, and then just go down, you know, down the states. From that's what I heard is how they schedule it. But I mean, I couldn't tell you if that's the way they actually did it.
Could you see maybe Group of Five schools regionally consolidating and saying, hey, look, let's bring New Mexico, New Mexico State, UTEP. Let's bring all the prospective pros together so there could be a better chance that scouts would be out to watch everybody.
Yeah, I mean, I do like that because you would get more scouts, but I feel like that would kind of make it like, you know, growing up in high school, you go to these local camps and there's so many kids and only a few coaches. So I feel like it's so hard to get noticed when you go to these big university camps. I feel like that's what it would end up being, you know, if you're really trying to showcase your talents and stuff. I think it's a double-edged sword, right? Because I say this, and then I say we had only a couple scouts at our pro day, and it's obviously the rest of the 32 teams aren't there. So it's hard. It's a double-edged kind of thing, and it's a pros and cons. But I enjoyed the way it is now, like how it's your individual school, the eight guys, whoever's doing pro day comes back, you do your pro day, you have the scouts. I mean, you just hope there's more scouts, right? Because a couple buddies of mine, and you know, some guys at Troy and La Tech, you know, I saw their scout turn out, and it was pretty crazy. I mean, it looks like there's one from each team, but
wow.
Yeah. And so I mean, that's motivating, right? And you see them go and do their thing. So you know, I think eventually it'll start, the scout turnout will just continue to go up. And, you know, I hope it does, because it's definitely beneficial.
Especially if you go to a place like Troy, yeah, and you got all these scouts at Troy, mm-hmm, and then we've got a handful here. That's the thing. More with Ray as we keep things moving. 31 past the hour. We're heading to Tim Haggerty and Chihuahua's baseball top of the hour. He'll have story time in about 15 minutes. But let's get one last SportsCenter update from Adrian, who's back with us.
All right, thank you, Steve. Let's head over right now to the hockey scoreboard. 7 minutes to go in the second period. This one scoreless right now. Hurricanes Islanders, 7 minutes to go in the second period. Again, no score on the board. East first round playoff action going on TBS. Carolina leading the series 2-0. End of the first period, Bruins up 1-0 against the Panthers. East first round playoff action on TNT as the series is tied 1-1. 7:30 start, Stars going up against the Wild. That one get started on TBS at 7:30. And then the 8 o'clock game, Oilers-Kings, TNT has the coverage. Series is tied in that one, 1-1. Let's head over to the baseball scoreboard right now. Pirates lead the Reds 3-2, bottom of the 7th. White Sox on top of the Rays, 7-5, top of the 6th. And then Rockies lead the Phillies by 1, 3-2, bottom of the 5th. Still scoreless out in Baltimore. Orioles hosting the Tigers at the bottom of the 6th. No score in that one. Blue Jays extend their lead against the Yankees. 4-1 is their advantage at the top of the 6th on Apple TV Plus. Braves up by 3 against the Astros, 4-1, bottom of the 4th. Apple TV Plus has that game. Rangers lead the A's 4-0 at the bottom of the 1st, early in that game. And then two other games just getting started. Red Sox Brewers and Nationals Twins, both those games in the second innings, and no score for either of them. Breaking news coming right now from ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski. An MRI has revealed that 76ers star Joel Embiid has suffered a right sprained knee, and he'll miss game 4 against Brooklyn Saturday. There's optimism he could be ready to return as early as next week. More injury news, Kawhi Leonard is out for game 4 against the Suns. That's a look at your SportsCenter update. I'm Adrian Broaddus.
Why does that seem like that's a recurring theme every single time we talk about Kawhi? I mean, the injuries. It's just, it's brutal. And by the way, the Sixers are up 3-0. So unless Embiid is completely out of the rest of the series, I'm not too worried about Philadelphia right now.
Yeah, I just don't like the injury. Sprained knee. Yeah. You know, that's the thing you get a little worried about. And then for Kawhi, he's playing arguably the best basketball in that first game with the Clippers, so it's a bummer that he's out for game 4.
That's really true. We're here with Ray Flores right now, folks. The NFL draft is next week. Ray's been giving us the scoop of what the last 3 months have been like for him. Training, getting ready for pro day, getting ready for his chance to play in the NFL and make a and make a team and make a training camp. And you seem like the kind of guy, you just need a chance. Like, you believe that as long as you've got a shot, that everything else will take care of itself. Am I pretty accurate on that?
Yeah, no, most definitely. That's what I'm riding on. You know, I feel like that's how I came. That's how I got into UTEP, was taking that, having faith in myself and taking that PWO offer and just running with it. And I feel like if same thing, I feel like if I just get that opportunity, I feel like I'm gonna just really take advantage of it. But there's a lot of guys that I played against, you know, that I was able to, you know, I dominated or played really well against, and they have, you know, they're like, you know, either for sure, you know, draft picks, or they're going to be, you know, undrafted guys for sure. And they're guys that I know that, you know, I can compete with and beat. So it's just about getting those, that opportunity for sure. That's what I'm looking forward to. And God willing, I get it.
PW is preferred walk-on, which is what you were. And it's important to note that. How many years, by the way, you walked on? Did you get a scholarship after your first year, your second year? When did you get the scholarship?
It was 2.5 years. So after my... two and a half years. After the second and a half year, after my first season of playing a lot of back, my retro sophomore year, that winter, that December, I got my scholarship. And the next 3.5 years that I was there, it was good. It was set.
Definitely. And what did you do? Did you gray shirt originally? Was that your was that how it worked for you?
No, I redshirted my freshman year, and that was the year that Coach Coogs at the time got fired midseason. So that's when I got there. So just a practice dummy, and then Coach D got there that spring. His first season was my redshirt freshman year, and I played all special teams, all 12 games, and then my second spring, and then that redshirt sophomore fall is when I got that scholarship.
Okay, so point is, you originally were going to walk on with Cougs, and then when Coach Dimmel came in, that's when everything kind of stepped up for you, and you went from your redshirt year to to playing, and everything just rolled from there.
Yeah, no, exactly. The just kind of like a snowball, I just started going my way, and I always told everybody, you know, Coach D does a great job with if you're a scholarship guy and a walk-on guy, you can never really tell. Everyone gets opportunities, everyone gets their chances, and that's what I'm, you know, most grateful and blessed that he was my coach at the time, because, you know, I got a chance and I took advantage of it, and I'm at where I'm at now.
Ray, this might be a weird question, but you have to put together a highlight video at the end of your career at UTEP. When you're looking at that highlight video, what are some of the highlights you're most proud of? Like, just standout moments when you have to send that video out to professional scouts or anybody out there. Which ones are you most proud of?
I mean, obviously, the biggest one is probably the most popular one, was the big catch the first game against North Texas. It was like a diving catch. That's probably my most fond memory, just because it really set the tone for the season for myself. Really gave me that not that boost of confidence that I needed, but just that clarity that, you know, this is going to be a good year for me. And then after that, you know, those big runs against FIU, the Boise game was definitely memorable. That was probably the best win in my life, probably.
Yep.
And then after that, FIU, the big one, and UTSA was a good one too, although that one has its pros and its cons. Had a good game, but one of the saddest days in my career, most definitely.
Well, I was there with that game with you, so I know exactly why. You had a team like that down and just couldn't put them away, because that would have given you a bowl game and so many other things that could have come with it.
Exactly.
I get you.
Yes, sir. Exactly.
Meanwhile, Would you consider yourself almost, I don't want to say a role model, but think about how many El Paso high school kids were like yourself.
Yeah.
They've played, they've had a really good career. Maybe they were overlooked by some schools and given an opportunity to come to UTEP and walk on, or another D1 school and walk on. And I mean, you're a great example about how you could just make the most of a situation.
Yeah, no, I think I have a really good story. And you know, any coaches that may be listening, man, if you really want to get in contact with me, you know, you reach out to me. I want to be an inspiration to a lot of these young guys, because I feel like, you know, that we all kind of went through the same thing. It's hard to get, you know, those big Division I offers, and even you can be just as good as I was and still go under the radar. So, you know, I think I have a good story. I'm blessed to be in the position I'm at. You know, I didn't really see it before the season, and you know, after the season happened, everything that happened, I realized, you know, so many kids look up to me, and you know, I am an inspiration to them. So I had the opportunity to talk to the at the senior All-Star game this past December. They asked me to come talk to them, and that was a great experience. Just being able to, you know, tell them what I went through and explain to them, you know, that, you know, it takes a lot. It's a long road. You know, you got to be able to go through the ups and the downs, the bumps and the bruises, and there's going to be some dark days and there's going to be some light days, but you just got to push through and, you know, give it your all every day, and it'll always work out for you.
Do you want to stay in the game after your playing career is over and get into coaching like so many former minors have in the high school ranks here locally? We've seen a lot of guys that have played at UTEP that have gone on to become assistant coaches, coordinators, and then potentially head coaches.
I mean, I've thought about it. Coaching, I've never really thought I could do it. Now that I'm finished, you know, I definitely think I could. But I mean, I have this engineering degree if things go bad, and probably going to write that for the beginning. But I mean, if the opportunity comes up, and maybe, you know, college or professional level, I get an opportunity to coach, you know, who knows? I might take advantage of it.
You could have your full-time job. You when it's all said and done, when you hung up your cleats, and then you could come work with us. You could be an analyst. You could join some kind of analyst work. You know, Ray, my real question I was going to ask you was, would you ever think about doing like a walk-on scholarship in the future? You know, 10-year NFL career. When it's done, you come back, give back to the program, and it's like a Ray Flores annual walk-on scholarship to somebody out there.
Yeah, no, most definitely. That would definitely be the ultimate goal. That's my plan. You know, eventually, you know, when I start, God willing, making some good money, hopefully it's from football, I definitely want to get back to the program. You know, I have so much love for this city and so much love for that team, man. If you guys really understood, you know, like I told you, you know, that last game at the end of the year was it was as good as it was, as tough as it was. And, you know, I love this school so much, and it meant so much to me. And even after that loss, you know, seeing everyone come up to me and, you know, give me a hug because they knew it was it was over. It was definitely a bittersweet feeling. But it was definitely one of the best nights of my life, regardless of what happened.
A lot of people loved watching you and are going to really remember your career at UTEP. So you made a big impact here.
Thank
Congratulations.
Thank
it's something
guys.
To be proud of. And we're excited about the next chapter for your life.
Sir.
And wish you nothing but the best, Ray.
Yes, sir. Thank you, guys. Appreciate you guys having me.
Ray Flores, folks, as we continue here on Sports Talk. Wrap it up next, Hags and Storytime. Sports Talk continues, 600 ESPN El Paso. Back here on Sports Talk 47 Past. It is story time. So happy we get another great tale from the voice of the El Paso Chihuahuas, Tim Haggerty, who's hanging out in Tacoma and has this story time for us.
This week, I'd like to talk about the least interesting basketball game in history. February of 2015, we go down to Alabama, where Bibb County beat Brookwood High School 2-0. It was a full 32-minute game, and the final score was 2-0. The first basket came in the first 15 seconds of the game. And from there, Bibb County decided to rest as much as possible offensively and then do what they had to do to defend well defensively. Of course, there was no shot clock in Alabama high school basketball. Otherwise, there would have had to be more shots. Final score at 2-0. Now, these two teams had actually played earlier in the season and had a normal 40-36 game. It was the lowest scoring known high school basketball game since 1977. So my question to you guys on this week's story time is, if you had to do play-by-play of a 2-0 basketball game, how frustrated would you be?
There would come a point when I would probably start yelling during the game that teams can't score a basket.
Me too.
You know, and by the way, I think Bibb County was pretty good that year, weren't they? It was a solid team.
Yes, yes. And they were just kind of passing it around, stalling, resting. That's a good question. It's not as if they were, you know, 1-for-80 from the field. They weren't taking shots. They were just kind of passing the ball around. It had to be a frustrated crowd.
Well, how about this? They played each other earlier in the season, and the score then was 40-36.
Yes. Saw that as well. Completely normal game. So it shows these guys knew how to play. I mean, to me, something has to be some kind of discipline to that coach, right? I mean, you have
people attending
this game, people that care about this game, and you're essentially not even trying.
Adrian?
Here's an article from Bleacher Report on this story. Quote, during the third quarter, most of the 200 fans in attendance began yelling for the teams to play, some using the bluest of languages, hurling their words like sharpened spears. Other fans began looking at their phones, bored of the game itself. Fitzpatrick, one of the coaches, sang to himself to pass the time.
Oh, my God. That's bad. Have we ever, by the way, and this begs the question, have we ever had a 1-0 game in basketball where the only point was scored at the line and made 1-of-2 and the entire game, maybe we got to go back to the peach baskets then, Hags.
That's a good question. You've piqued my interest. 1-0 basketball game. A quick search. I mean, who knows? I'm just reading live here. But apparently, the first ever basketball game from this site, NBA Hoops Online, says the final score was 1-0 after two 15-minute halves.
Okay, good. Good. Well, there has been a 1-0 game. That's good to know. Has to go back a long time. Just be happy you weren't calling that, because people don't realize this, but you've called basketball before. You've called New Mexico State basketball. You've called UTEP basketball. And, you know, you pride yourself on being an announcer who can handle multiple sports. So how crazy would you go as a play-by-play announcer being there for a 2-0 game?
You know, typically when broadcasting a game, you don't necessarily, you know, really want, think about somebody to want to lose. You're focused on your broadcast. But I think I would desperately hope that Brookwood High School, at the last moment, went down and hit a three-pointer to win 3-2.
That's
to stick
answer.
It to this team that won 2-0. I also think that maybe as a way to control this Bibb County madness, that Alabama high school basketball should add a shot clock.
Yeah, that would make sense. That would be good. Well, they didn't exactly just hold the ball the entire quarter, did they?
The phrase I saw in the ESPN article was stalled and resting offensively. I think they were just sort of passing it around.
Oh, my God.
Playing keep away.
And I think the team that was doing that was a team that was losing, which is even worse, right? The team that lost 2-0 was the team that was actually doing that. So go figure. So maybe they deserve to lose. Stupid team who's tried to arrest and stall like that. You get what you deserve.
Yeah, they deserve those verbal spears that Adrian described.
I think so, too. Meanwhile, game comes up in about a little more than an hour, continues into the weekend, and then you're back home on Monday. You come back on Monday and get ready for another big week of Chihuahuas baseball back here at home.
Yeah, the Chihuahuas have two different home series coming up. It's a 12-game homestand.
Wow.
It'll begin on Tuesday against Salt Lake. You're right, after flying back on Monday. It's the Bees, the Angels affiliate coming to town. After that, the Oklahoma City Dodgers. Should be a really fun homestand. In the meantime, we've been lucky here that there's been just one weather delay because it has been raining every day. Mm. Luckily, today it's clear. The field is uncovered. The teams have been able to have their afternoon workouts and batting practice, which was not the case the past couple of days. It was interesting. You know, last night there was a little bit of tension between the umpires and the teams wondering if in the eighth inning, if the game should be halted because it was transitioning from a drizzle into a heavy rain. But the game proceeded, and they played all nine innings, much of which was being hit by rain, temperatures in the 40s. Just talking to Chihuahua's coaches who were coaching first base and third base, talking about how their cleats were soaking wet.
Oof.
And
well, hopefully you stay dry.
Just how cold it was. Yeah, I pulled a veteran move, and I brought long johns up here, so I have those under my dress pants.
Oh, look at that.
Typically, I wear a collared shirt. Today, I'm going sweatshirt underneath a jacket, so I'm making an exception.
Wow. You're clutch, Hags. You're going clutch today. I like that. Can you tweet a picture of yourself out for this? That would be great.
Okay.
Thank you. A little selfie, if you don't mind. That'd be perfect. All right, we'll check you out here at about 8 o'clock when we come back for baseball tonight. And have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
Okay. Talk to you guys then.
Sounds great. Alicia, thank you for being here, sitting in for us all show, all week long. We appreciate that, and we'll get a chance to talk to you again on Monday.
Yes, talk to you on Monday.
Adrian, I hope you have a great week planned. I'm heading to the ballpark right now.
Nice.
Game tomorrow, game tonight. I'm playing Sunday. Going to be a lot of fun. A lot of baseball this weekend.
Have a great weekend, Steve.
You too, everybody. We'll talk to you then coming up Monday at 4, right here, 600 ESPN El Paso.